into the issue of intimacy. I wrote an article about, actually 16 years ago, that's still very appropriate, and it's called Intimacy in Relationships. You could actually read it in its entirety on my website, tellthetruthfaster.com. Just click Articles and click Intimacy in Relationships, and you'll see the full article. But what I'm going to be doing on the show today is defining intimacy and talking about how intimacy is a problem in our society, not just within ourselves for a lot of people, but within our society, and how to heal that. So to me, more than anything, the most important factor in expressing a higher level of intimacy is learning to tell the truth faster, which is what this show is about. Moving through the fears, angers, and discomfort by realizing them quickly is a tool that keeps us clear and more in present time and always connected. And what we're going to be talking about tonight is beyond sex. When most people hear the word intimacy, very often the first thing they think of is sexual intimacy. While what we're talking about tonight includes the sexual intimacy, it is beyond that. And the issue to tell the truth faster to yourself, to whatever higher power you deal with, or to another person when appropriate, is the quickest way I know to achieve intimacy in our lives. So I'm going to define intimacy as I work with it when I'm dealing with clients and in my own life. I define intimacy as an expression of our natural desire for connection. I'm going to say it again. Intimacy is an expression of our natural desire for connection. The key words being natural and connection in there. Intimacy and that kind of connection is as ingrained natural state as we can find. If you remember back to your own birth, and believe it or not, you can, or if you've ever seen a newborn or an infant, you know that there is no barrier that they have. They haven't been taught yet what hurt is about, what fear is about, what caution is about. They're connected. And it's a natural state of being for them. They're available. When they look at you, you could see into their soul. When you look at them, it's the same feeling. It brings peace to us because they have that natural connection. And what happens as we're growing up is over time, as I said, we start being taught manipulations and games and that getting too close may hurt and that people leave us, and so don't risk getting too close because they're going to die or they're going to leave us or it's going to be painful, they're going to be critical, and so on and so on and so on. So, again, that we came into the world knowing what that natural state of connection is about. And we've been taught how to disconnect. It's just like hate. No child is born knowing how to hate. We teach them how to hate and judge and have prejudice. It's the same thing with intimacy. The safety that that brings is something. There's a memory of it inside all of us. So think about that. And think about even being in the womb. In the womb, it was the most intimate connection we've ever had and ever will have in our lives. We're inside our mom, another human being. We're totally connected through the umbilical cord. We're being fed and we're connected to everything she's thinking or feeling, everything that's going on outside, but it's the natural flow of life that keeps feeding us. And then we get bigger and bigger in there, and we know it's time to leave, and some of us don't want to, but it is time to leave. And as soon as we come out, someone cuts that cord, and we spend the rest of our lives trying to get back in there, trying to get that sense of connection and that sense of safety. For most of us, that womb was a safe place, but not all of us, but trying to get back inside. Even if you think of what sex looks like, it's about getting back inside someone else or someone getting inside you. It's still moving inside and connecting like that. So what's happened, as I said, is that once we're out of the womb, things start happening. And the things that we're taught start creating a deeper and deeper sense of disconnection. lack of intimacy, longing for intimacy, along with the fear of intimacy, start showing up at the same time. Now, when I'm talking about intimacy in relationships, relationships are not just about primary relationship with a partner, with a mate, with a spouse, a husband, wife, a lover, whatever you want to call it. When we're talking about relationships today, I'm talking about those. But the other part of it is we're all in relationship with everything and everyone else. Okay? The Native Americans, I really think, had the really right idea. We have a relationship with everything. We have a relationship with the planet and the earth and water and the stars. We have a relationship with our ancestors as well as those on the planet now. We have relationship with our body. We have relationship with our job. We have a relationship with finances and money. We have a relationship with our home and our car. Now, take a look at that, all right? A lot of people can tell what kind, how they do things in terms of relationship and intimacy if you just look at the car you're driving and how you take care of it. Or your home, whether it's an apartment or a house or whatever, and how you take care of it. Is it cluttered? Is it neat? Is it compulsively neat? Is it comfortable? Or is it stiff? And if you take a look at what your life is like, as I mentioned last week, and I talked about having a passion for your career or your job, you have a relationship with that job. You have a relationship with the career. And if it's not the right one, then you're not feeling intimately connected to it, which means you're not enjoying it, and you're not as likely to succeed at it. Now, with some people, they may succeed at it because their relationship with money is so important and they have a very intimate relationship with them, and the job is a means to that form of intimacy. So as you see, when I'm talking about intimacy in relationships, I'm speaking in a very broad sense as well as a primary relationship. Now, again, if there's anything I'm saying that you feel you want to comment on, disagree with, agree with, or talk about some situation you're dealing with, this is a live show. The number is 480-949-1310. Now, as I've defined intimacy, we also then have a lot of other issues that come into play. For a lot of people, the issue of intimacy is totally connected with the issue of self-esteem. And I really believe there's an epidemic in this country of low self-esteem. So, if you think about that, think in terms of your own life. If you're not feeling real good about yourself, who's really going to want to connect with you? Who's really going to want to fall in love with you? How close are you going to let somebody else get? How vulnerable and open are you going to allow yourself to be if your belief is, I'm not good enough? If your belief is, nobody's going to want me, I'm not lovable? Or if they get too close, they'll see what a mess I am. Or if they get too close, they'll see how bad I am, how guilty I am. They'll have to know my secrets, and I don't want that. Now, all those thoughts and beliefs are about low self-esteem. You haven't forgiven yourself. You haven't healed those wounds of the past. That's what a lot of people go for therapy for, okay, to heal the wounds of the past and to be more present in the present, to be more completely here in the present, and to feel more joy and passion in their lives in the present without letting the past or the fear of the future interfere with that. Now, when you get to that point, again, intimacy is something that is so much easier to achieve. So, one example that I like to give all the time, I mean, my practice is in Los Angeles. I have a number of clients over the years and currently that are in the entertainment industry, whether it is modeling, whether it's acting, whether no matter what form of it is. So when you think of it, this is the prime place for people to put a lot of stock on appearance. Not to say it's not happening in Phoenix and everywhere else. But what always has amazed me, and it doesn't surprise me anymore, but it still amazes me, is that some of the most beautiful, attractive people ones that you see in the gyms that have the most amazing bodies, whether it's men or women, very often, not always, but very often, are building those bodies and putting up that kind of commitment to working those bodies because they really don't believe they're attractive to begin with. There is that innate thing that they look in the mirror and don't see what we see when we look at them. It's low self-esteem. And all of you, I'm sure, can think of someone, if not yourself, who looks in the mirror and doesn't see what most people would define as, in our society, a hunk or a hottie. All right? So if that's you, ask yourself, what is it going to do me to put on an extra inch of muscle? What is it going to do me to get that plastic surgery so that my nose looks different to only me? I mean, we see this all the time with the amount of plastic surgery that goes on everywhere. And again, it's about self-esteem issues. Now, a certain level of that is appropriate and healthy. To be able to go to the gym and to want a healthy body, one that functions real well for us, one that looks good. But it's that obsessiveness that I'm talking about, people who get to that point. And there's nothing wrong with plastic surgery, but it's usually the people, and we've all read in the papers or maybe know somebody, who are obsessed with another nip, another tuck, fixing this, fixing that, because no matter how beautiful they are, they still feel there's something more that needs to be done. So when dealing with self-esteem, if you look at people like that, take a look at their history and relationships if you know them personally. And if you are one of those people, take a look at your own history and relationships. How connected do you get to somebody? How below the surface and below the skin do you let people get inside you? How vulnerable and honest are you allowing yourself to be in relationship? Are you so afraid, if you're an actor or a model or something, that if you're not literally picture perfect, that you'll never get the next job? Now, that particular industry usually encourages that kind of fear, and our society tends to encourage that kind of fear. You know, the prejudice against overweight people, the prejudice against hairy people, the prejudices against too short or too tall people, those that are not visually perfect in our society are judged, and they have a more difficult time in certain situations than, say, the ideal that we're looking at. Now, I know I'm spending a lot of time right now talking about the physical. But there's no disconnection. Remember I said that this is that my approach is holistic. If you're dealing with things that are of the physical, it's also connecting to what is going on emotionally and psychologically. So the inner workings that talk about negative thoughts and beliefs one have about themselves translate into how well you take care of your body, your health. Not just a workout, but I'm talking about how you care for your body. How abusive are you to your body? Drugs, alcohol, compulsive sex, not getting enough sleep, whatever. So there is an intimate connection with the body and the emotional stuff. And even the spiritual stuff also affects it because a lot of people who have a difficult time with intimacy, a lot of people who have a difficult time with looking in the mirror and seeing what an angel they really are, no matter what they look like, also usually have a difficult time connecting spiritually, whether it's religion, whether it is a spiritual path that they work, whether no matter what it is, there's a disconnect that is created spiritually. Now, a lot of people have those negative thoughts and go through the motions of being religious and spiritually righteous people. But again, it's just like those people at the gym that are putting on this curvaceous body for the women and the muscled body for the men. It's a front. And so all of us, again, know people that even as they espouse their religious beliefs and look like spiritual gurus, they're not necessarily feeling it inside. It's like they're acting as if, hoping that people will believe this is who they are and not look any deeper. Even I've been guilty of this particular thing, and it usually catches up to us. It usually catches up to us. Somebody somewhere is going to see the truth and call you on it, which means even more embarrassment and more shame and more withdrawal, unless you're at a point where you're hearing it and saying, thank you for speaking the truth to me, because I needed to hear that in order for me to change and move forward and to heal. That's what telling the truth faster is about. If you love somebody enough, then maybe you need to learn how and find a way to tell them what you're noticing. And if you realize that you have some problems, then maybe it's time to approach people and say, look, I really need some feedback here. Tell me the truth. I'm not going to get angry with you, but mean it. You know, because most people see that as a setup. And listen. Take notes. Thank them. And don't even comment to what they're saying. Just listen and take it in. Some of them may be valid, some of it may not, but there'll be some truth in what you're hearing. So now, here we are dealing with the physical issues, the emotional issues, the psychological issues, the spiritual issues, how it relates to self-esteem, and how it impacts our ability to be intimate. And as I'm talking about intimacy, this is true whether you're gay or straight. Everything I'm saying so far, sexual orientation, I know I'm going to be talking about sex in a little bit, sexual orientation has nothing to do with the issues around a desire for connection. Now, if you're gay or lesbian, maybe there are some issues that make it more difficult, because maybe you've been reinforced the fact that it's not safe in the world to be who I am and to be open, and that it's not okay to stay in long-term relationships if I'm a gay man or a lesbian. And if you look through the gay community and the GLBT community, you may see, as most of us over the years, long-term relationships have only just recently been something that has become evident in the gay community. I personally believe it's AIDS that really implemented that, because people, gay men in particular, started realizing the value of having someone in their lives and not being so quick to run away. And as deaths were happening and how fleeting a lot of this love was, coming and then going, a lot of gay men actually started focusing more on relationship and intimacies and getting into couples counseling instead of assuming it's okay just to run. That if this one's not working and this is too much work, I'll move on to the next. Now, that happens in heterosexual relationships too. How many of you are serial monogamous, as it's called? You don't stay too long with one, you move on to the next. When things get too close or too much trouble, too much effort, and you're not willing to put in the time and be honest and speak your truth as well as hear some truth and feel the discomfort of what that may be in order to get past the discomfort and into a more elevated connection with yourself as well as with your partner, you know, we see a lot of heterosexuals that do the same thing. The thing with heterosexuals is that because there's legal marriage, it makes it more difficult to do that. And while in Canada and a number of other countries now, you know, gays and lesbians can marry, and I'm really hoping that'll be seen in this country soon, that commitment, that public commitment, that ceremony, no matter what it is, puts another level onto the fear of letting go. And I've known people that have lived together for 20 years and then finally decided to get married and then split up within the first year after the marriage. There was something about that level of commitment and that level of they felt blocked in. And yet they were fine when they were just living together. So marriage brings up a lot of stuff for a lot of people, and very often it has to do with the things we saw in our parents. So we're going to turn now, I'm going to turn now to sex. And whether you are sexually active or not sexually active, whether you're sexually active because you choose to or because you can't stop, whether you're not sexually active because you choose to be celibate, or you're just lonely and are not able to find healthy sex partners, either way, sex can be an elevating condition to connection. And sex can also play a part in how we disconnect, how we avoid intimacy. There's a lot being written today about sex addiction, compulsive sexual behaviors, love addiction. Any addiction, whether it's drugs, alcohol, gambling, food, sex, every addiction creates a disconnection. We all know that addictions help people numb, help people withdraw, help people avoid dealing with issues in their lives. And so if you think about it, whether no matter what the addiction is, it's hard to have intimate relationships. Any of you that are in 12-step programs, maybe you've been in it long enough that you've seen your relationships get healthier and healthier and healthier, and God willing, that's the case. And those of you who don't have a lot of sobriety know that that is a big part of the goal. But you have to be willing to deal with the discomfort of what that means, of what being connected to somebody or even your job or your health means when you're not drunk or using, or sexing, or eating, okay? So if you get sober, true sobriety is not just not using whatever the substance or behavior is. True sobriety is not using and healing the fears that are discovered that you've been running from. And that's what 12-step programs are about. That's what treatment programs are about. That's what therapy for addicts are about. Is really removing the substance or the behavior so that you can access the things that you've been running from. So you can access your ability now to connect and be intimate. And for many people, the 12-step group is the first place they start becoming intimate, whether it's with their sponsor or the energy of the group. There's a sense of camaraderie and intimacy that a lot of people in 12-step meetings find, and it's a good place to try it on. And it's not familiar for most of them. So if we're talking about sex and intimacy, then sex can be considered, as I said before, an incredible way to increase your level of connection. Making love. And sex can also be an amazing tool for disconnecting and chaos, as we all know and have all seen. Not experienced it in your own life, you've certainly seen it in movies, okay? So sex can be, like I said, if it's really about connection, sex is about making love. There are many forms of making love that bring us that sense of connection. Sex is just one of them. You know, a caring comment is a way of making love and making connection. Doing something special for someone you care about, whether it's cooking them a meal or buying them a gift, or just taking them on a hike into the mountains, that is about connecting, intimacy, making love. There are many forms of doing that. Sex is just one of many ways. A lot of people put too much stock in sex. I believe that a healthy relationship also has a healthy level of lust and desire and things like that. But people's libidos change over time, change through time, become stronger, becomes weaker, goes stronger again and stuff, depending on what's going on in their lives, the health of their bodies, the situation of stress that's going on. And people need to understand that your partner may not always be available, but the connection can take place and deeper intimacy can take place if you ask and you listen to what's going on that is causing them stress and how you can assist them, or at least understand and not make matters worse by insisting that sex happen. Because what you're doing then, it's really just about sex you're looking for and not about an expression of your love, not about a connection of intimacy. Now, on the other hand, there are a lot of people who will use that as a way of staying disconnected. They'll use that any time that someone says, I want to make love to you tonight, and the other person is not dealing with issues. They'll say, see, that's all you want. That's all I'm good for. And they'll start criticizing and using that as leverage to make things uncomfortable again. So if we're dealing now with sex, think about your own sex life in the past or currently. Think about a time when you knew you were having sex and were totally disconnected. Think about a time when you were having sex and was totally disconnected, not really present with that person, and your mind was off about maybe thinking about someone else that you find more attractive, maybe thinking about doing your laundry and just not being present. Maybe it's about the things you need to get done with at work or the day you had, and you're really just going through the motions. Is it because you really don't want to be with this person? You're not attracted to this person? Or it could also be that you're afraid of the connection of what that sexual experience would feel like if you were fully present, fully attending to the person you're with. I went out, I'm a gay man, and I went out with a guy a few weeks ago. And we'd had a couple of dates, and we were in bed together, and he asked about if I had any porn. And personally speaking, I have nothing against porn, but I don't like porn playing when I'm in bed with someone and making love to them. It's a distraction. Either I'm feeling they're being distracted, or I get distracted. And when I'm with someone, I want to feel that connection. I want to feel with them and them with me, the touching, the eye contact, the energy that goes on, the kissing, all that stuff. Again, whether you're gay or straight, we can all relate to what I'm talking about. So are you distracted during sex? Is it common? If it is, then you really need to take a look at what it is you're afraid of being that close. Have you had traumas in your past, like sexual abuse or rape or a lot of rejection and criticism because of your body or because you were with somebody who was really crazy, and you haven't dealt with those things? That's going to keep you from being present with any lover that you might have. Tell the truth faster. So if being sexual with someone is just very uncomfortable, then you have to deal with what the discomfort's about. And most of the time, it's not about the person you're with. It's about something that's going on inside you that does not let you feel comfortable to really relax, enjoy the moment, enjoy the experience, and connect with this other human being. So sex as an expression of intimacy may not or may even involve orgasm. Touching, holding, exploring each other's or your own body, talking before and after, learning how to relax and be more playful, healing your own judgments about your body are all concepts and practices to be incorporated into a healthy sexual life and a more intimate sexual life. There are a lot of people, who go for the disconnection, who think the goal of sex is always an orgasm, men and women. But really, to me, there's so much more that is about the connection. Like I said, the touching, the holding, the exploration, and the thing that's most difficult for most people is talking about sex with their partner. Talking about it when they're not having sex, to say, I like this, I don't like this, I really enjoy this one with you, you know, whatever. But even it's important how many of you are afraid to say something while you're making love to someone or having sex with someone, and those are usually two different things, because you're afraid to hurt their feelings. If they're doing something you really wish they wouldn't be doing, or it's too uncomfortable, or it's painful, and you're afraid to say something, so you endure it. What happens when you start enduring that? You're disconnecting. What if there's something you really want to try or something that you really like, would like to do with them or to them, but you're afraid to ask? You're limiting the playfulness. You're limiting the joy of the whole thing, of the whole experience. So when we're talking about intimacy and relationships and we're dealing with it on a sexual level, then we're talking about the ability to communicate about sex. And again, how many of you listening know that that's probably one of the most uncomfortable things you can think of talking about with someone you're close to? You know, we always say that, you know, the parents talk to their kids about sex is excruciating to the kid as well as for the parent. And yet there are households where it's as natural and normal to ask sexual questions about sex and to have discussions without it being stepping over boundaries or whatever. And those kids are raised in an environment where there's something natural and healthy about their sexual expression. So it really is about healing your own judgments about sex itself. What are the negative thoughts you have? Where did they come from? Did it come from your parents? Did it come from your religion? Did it come from whatever cultural or societal group, you know, you grew up in, or area of the country you grew up in, where there was a lot of shame? And I'm not just talking about homosexuality. I'm talking about heterosexuals that deal with these issues themselves all the time. Okay? And are those things, those beliefs, those thoughts, those constrictions that you've been taught, are they things you really believe? Or are you just afraid to question them, afraid to explore them? Think about what it would be like if you sat in a therapist's office and said, I want to talk about these things. I'm not sure I buy into everything that I was told or taught. I feel inexperienced, and I want to connect more with my partner, and I don't know how to tell them that. I don't know how to tell them I want to explore a deeper sense of making love and sexuality in the relationship. So what happens in a lot of relationships is they become open relationships, you know, gay or straight. And what happens when they become open relationships for most people is there's a diluting, again, of the connection in the primary relationship. So it is important to take a look at the truth and reality of what you're dealing with, who you are in the world, where those things came from, how you're connecting or disconnecting in terms of your primary partner, or if you don't have a primary partner, in terms of your life in general. Because these same things are going to play out, whether it's in a primary relationship or whether it is on your job, in your health, anything like that. So we're asking the same questions no matter what, whether you're single or whether you're in a relationship. If you're single, look at your history. Look at the history of relationships. When I have a client in for the first time, and I had a new client today, and I asked him about his history with women. Now, he's been obsessed on a particular woman that he broke up with recently, and he can't get his mind off of it, even though he knows clearly it was an unhealthy, dysfunctional relationship. And what I did is say, I usually say, let's get a relationship history here. And I have them go back to the first significant relationship they had in terms of a primary partner. Sometimes it goes back to grade school or high school. Sometimes it's not till college. Sometimes it's after. Sometimes they've never had one. Okay? But once they start, and I write these down, the name, the age when you met her or him, how old were they, what did they do for a living, how would you describe the relationship, why did it break up, who left who, and then I say, and the next one, how long between them. And for some people, there's a pattern that they're no sooner out of one relationship when they're into the next. Some people, when they're not even out of the one relationship, but they're trying to get out of it, the only way they feel safe in doing it is if they already have the next one lined up. And I know some of you can relate to what I'm saying. Instead of taking the time between the relationships to assess the situation and heal. So most of the time, and this guy said it today also, he said, I never looked at that history before that way. You know, I've talked about the the one I dated in college, but I've never pieced it together in a timeline like that and saw the differences and similarities. For most of us, if we don't do the healing, what we do is we keep getting involved with the same person over and over again. Meaning, they may be a different body, they may be a different face, it may be a different time, but the context and the behaviors and the dysfunctionality of the relationship ends up being the same over and over again. And it will continue to do that until you take the time to get honest about the reasons that keeps happening. That you take the time in therapy and reading and workshops to really get in touch with the things that you keep repeating over and over and over and over and over again. Which means, at a certain point in your life, the guy I was talking about today is in his late 50s, early 60s, and there's a real sense of depression and hopelessness because there's never been a healthy, real intimate situation for him. And remember, when I defined intimacy at the beginning of this hour, I defined it as an expression of our natural desire for connection. Natural desire. So at any point in our lives, we can realize if something's missing, it's because there's something that's naturally within us, something innate that we're not expressing and we're not embracing. And that feels wrong. And that feels like something's lacking. We usually translate that to something's lacking in me. Something's wrong with me. Now, the reality of that is there may be something wrong with you, but not in the way you're thinking about it. What may be wrong with you is you're just not seeing the patterns, and you can't change them if you don't see them. What may be wrong with you is you're just not willing to take the time and sit down in the presence of someone else and start getting as honest as we've been talking about, with a therapist in particular. So what's wrong with you is really the fear that keeps you disconnected. Okay? There may be nothing else wrong with you. You may be a loving person in every way other than creating primary relationships for yourself. You may be the most incredible human being doing the most amazing things in the world or in your community or in your home and in your life. But that innate, natural connection to somebody primary is a natural state of being for most of us, and we desire it. And many of us sabotage it and avoid it. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody should be in a primary relationship. Okay? I'm not saying there's something wrong with you if you're not having this. If what you have discovered is a sense of peace within yourself and a contentment with who you are that's genuine, and you're expressing that desire for connection in other ways that are fulfilling, and there are people, a lot of people, that are made up in the way that that's their focus, that's their purpose in life. And having that primary relationship is not their way of expressing it in a healthy way. The same way some people choose not to have children. And others that have children will say, well, what's wrong with you? That, you know, are you afraid of the responsibility? It may just be that that's not the form of connection that they're doing in this lifetime. And there's nothing wrong with that. If, like I said, you've come to that place in a peaceful way, in a way that you know that this is the right place for you, a real sense of knowing that there's no judgment connected with it, there's no fear of other people's judgment, because the self-esteem is so high and your sense of self and your sense of purpose is so high and so firm, that doesn't matter what any other people say. And I know all of you can understand what I'm talking about. So we talked about primary relationships. I talked briefly about intimacy in the context of career and job. And again, you can take a look at it in terms of your relationship with money and finances, you know? How many of you are dealing with such tremendous stress because all your credit cards are maxed out, or your income is not high enough for the way you spend, or that you feel less than because you have not created income or a career or a job that produces the kind of money that maybe your siblings get or your parents got or friends have. So you feel less than, you feel withdrawn, and you feel disconnected. Again, the same beliefs that came into play with the career stuff, with the primary relationship stuff, usually come into play with the finances. The same low self-esteem, okay? The same negative thoughts you have about yourself, about being unlovable or not being worthy, will also make it difficult to attract comfortable and safe levels of finances in your life. And if you do get it, and we've seen this all the time, well, not all the time, because I don't know any, actually, I know one person that won the lottery a number of years ago, but we hear about it a lot from people who sometimes win millions of dollars in the lottery or inherit millions of dollars, and within a few years it's all gone. They have nothing to show for it, and they're back to where they were before because they didn't feel they deserved it. They didn't feel they earned it. They didn't feel worthy of it. It made them maybe even feel more disconnected from people that they cared about because nobody knew how to relate to one another with these millions in their lives. So we hear and read about this all the time of people who come into vast amount of money and go through it. So the issue around money is the same as all the other things that we've been talking about. Again, we have about 12 minutes left. If anybody wants to call in, make a comment, or agree or disagree with anything I'm saying, the number is 480-949-1310. Now, moving on, there is other issues that come into play when we're dealing with intimacy. And some of those have to do with disease. Okay? We talked about body issues before, but one of the things that I didn't talk about was illness and disease and how that comes into the equation here. There are a lot of metaphysical people who will say, well, people create disease in their bodies, and this is something that they chose on a subconscious level, and you know, it's their way of not being whole, not being present. You know, to a certain extent, I do believe that since doctors say that 95% of illnesses are psychosomatic, that there is some truth to that. But I also know that there are germs and viruses like the AIDS virus and things like that that, you know, you come in contact with it, for the most part, you're going to end up affecting your immune system. So even in this age of AIDS, as I call it, because I've been working in the field since the mid-80s, I've seen people leave very quickly when they've been diagnosed. In fact, I've seen a couple of people within a couple of months of being told that they were HIV positive or had AIDS, they were out of their bodies and gone. They've died. I see other people who have, for 20, 25 years, have been HIV positive or even AIDS diagnosed. And the sense of presence and being here is so important to them that they're still doing it. And a lot of us realized, and again, you can apply this to the situation with AIDS. If you look at someone you know or yourself that has cancer or multiple sclerosis or anything that really is evident and life-altering, for a lot of people, it brings with it a level of vulnerability once they get beyond the fear, and it brings a level of vulnerability that allows for even more intimacy than they've ever had in their lives. And I've seen this even with so many friends over the years that have died from AIDS, that have been diagnosed, that I've been at bedsides and stuff. I never experienced as much connection, depth of connection, as I did serving these friends that were going through such difficult times. miss. And it brings a certain closeness into a family. Now, for some cases, we see an illness comes and somebody runs away. They can't deal with it. But for a lot of people, illness and disease kind of strips away all the other stuff, all the stuff that we realize is like minor when you really think about it. And why are we attending to these crises and struggles and conflicts and everything else when what's really important is I want to spend as much quality time with the people I care about or with the person I care about as possible, and all of a sudden there's a level of peace and connection that starts showing up in someone's life when this is going on. So I'm certainly not saying go out and get a disease in order to start dealing with intimacy. The whole idea is to deal with the intimacy issues, to deal with the blocks you have towards it, so that you're not under so much stress that you end up getting ill. Now remember, we can create these things consciously and subconsciously. All right? There are people who end up getting ill because of not being conscious of the struggles they're going through. They end up drinking, getting into a car accident, and ending up in a wheelchair. And if you talk to a lot of people who have gone through that and war veterans that are coming back, some of them just feel so much more alive and empowered without their legs, without in this difficult situation. They've seen what it has taken to rise to the occasion and make a choice. Do I want to be alive or not? Do I want to be here or not? Is this limitation because of not having my legs, is that really going to limit me? I can choose to let it. I can choose not to. And all of a sudden, relationships, people show up they never thought would show up. People who are in their lives may disappear. But what happens is a much deeper level of connection starts occurring. Because people who are dealing with that, and I've seen it with my friends with AIDS that have survived, there has been, a lot of them have said, the best thing that ever happened to me was getting AIDS. I have been more peaceful, I've been more spiritual, I've been more purposeful, and it made me really take a look at what life is about for me and what I want and what I don't like, who I want in my life and who I don't want in my life, how I want to treat people and how I don't want to treat people. And whatever time I have left, then I want intimacy in every form, in every arena. And I've heard people with a lot of different illnesses say the same thing. Since I have been diagnosed, something amazing has started to happen in my life. There's more love in my life. There's more peace in my life. I have more friends. Or those that choose not to deal with it usually end up sitting alone and in dark rooms being very irritable and cranky, and people don't want to be around them. Because those people are not dealing with the fears that come with a diagnosis. They're not dealing with the things that terrify us about death and dying. And one thing I learned in the 20 years dealing with HIV and AIDS in my community is if you don't face your fear of dying and death, you cannot live fully. If you don't face those fears, you cannot fully be present in relationships. You cannot fully be present and intimate. Because any time there's any level of fear going on, it's creating separation. Any level of fear going on creates a wall, a barrier, because we're afraid that people are going to see that we're afraid, you know, or we're afraid people are going to see something inside us, like I said very early on in the show. So the important thing is deal with your fears. Deal with the fear of living and dying. Some of us are really afraid of really fully being alive. So with a disease, again, you know, you could say that someone who, in this day and age, someone who gets infected with HIV, with all the information, with all everything out there that we know about it, people know what to do not to get infected. And if people are choosing not to do that, then I have to ask myself the question, why? Why are you willing to take a risk like that for a moment of pleasure? Okay? there, like I said, it's not just about getting infected like that, but there are a lot of ways people create physical illness or accidents that are not really accidents. You were so stressed out, you weren't paying attention, and you got into a car accident. It's because you weren't dealing with the stress level. It's because you weren't dealing with the issues that were screaming to you to take a look at and heal. So you disconnected, you separated, and you were not being very intimate with yourself and your own inner voice or your higher power. And to me, the inner voice is our higher power. So intimacy really comes back down to ourselves as an individual and how much we connect inside ourselves. And the show has come full circle because I really started with that. And I talked about primary relationships and work and career and health and body and everything else. But to heal any of that stuff comes back to needing to center ourselves with who we are, who we want to be, and what's keeping us from being fully present in our own lives, fully conscious, fully aware. What's stressing us and why is it stressing us? Where we can get help to heal that? Why are we choosing not to get help? Or if I've heard a lot of people say, well, I really need to get into therapy, but I can't afford it. Well, the truth is, in any community, there are therapists that will work on a sliding scale. There are clinics somewhere that will do some mental health stuff. And you need to look at your insurance policies if you have health insurance, because there's usually some clause in there that will cover some semblance of it. There are support groups that don't cost anything. And so I leave you this week with, when a person is willing to see it as such, this moving towards a deeper state of intimacy or union in one's life allows for a deeper spiritual connection. It brings a deeper sense of peace, a more profound sense of safety, and returns us to a familiar time of innocence. That's what we're looking for. So I want to thank you for listening. This is Stuart Altshuler with Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM 1310 AM in Phoenix. And I invite you to give your comments and visit my website, TellTheTruthFaster.com, and I'll be here next week. Have a good weekend. That I heard.